Yes, this is very good. It's my last presentation. I've been on 3 weeks of presenting, like 16 or 17 different decks. So thank you for coming to my session. I appreciate it. I'll try to be as lively as possible. I'm still running on US time zone, I think, which is 4:16 a.m. or something like that. So my name's Nick Harris, and today we're here to talk about cloud enabling your Windows Store apps with mobile services. I believe this session's an hour and 15 minutes long, right? So how many people here do we have that are actually doing perhaps Windows Phone development or Android development? So Windows Phone, a couple guys, Android, can you please leave the room? just kidding. All right, so I'll give you, since this is sort of 15 minutes longer than I normally speak, then I guess we can do a little bit of Android and Windows Phone in the first demo as well. So you'll sort of see how mobile services can create a centralized backend that spans device application platforms. So I'm Nick Harris. You can reach me on Twitter at CloudNick. There's my blog. I'm a senior technical evangelist, and I reside in Redmond, Washington. So let's get started here. Today, we'll talk about Windows Azure Mobile Services and what it is. How many people here have actually heard of mobile services before or seen something relating to it? How much have you seen? Just throw out some, have you seen data? No? Like structured storage? Push? No? Yes? A couple? All right. That's good. So hopefully new content for you guys, and you'll like what you see here. So mobile services, we're going to talk about data, push notifications, auth, the scheduler, and the Azure Store. We'll focus predominantly on Windows Store apps, but since we do have that bit of extra time, I'll also spin up a WinPhone and Android app for you. Cannot guarantee the Android stuff will emulator will work for me, because I'm not a hardcore Android guy, but it should be okay. So let's talk about what Windows Azure Mobile Services is. So this is a new service that we released back in August last year, and essentially it's a powerful turnkey backend for your device applications. Today we support Windows Store apps, Phone 8, iOS, and Android as client platforms. Happy to announce that this week we just released the client SDK for Android. So if you are some of those people who put your hands up doing Android dev, you've got a really nice, clean SDK that you can utilize to do that. So what are the core pieces or core tenets that we provide within Windows Azure Mobile Services? Essentially, when we designed this, we wanted to ensure that it's going to help accelerate client application developers to build out back-end solutions. And to do that, we picked common scenarios that mobile devs have, such as I need to store data within a back-end service. So we've got a very turnkey solution for that. So that's what the data block is about. On top of that, when you're actually going out and building out services, the next thing that you typically want to do is, hey, I want to execute some business logic on my web tier. So we've got what we call service scripts, and that allows you to execute your own script and business logic on the server side. We've got an auth block that allows you to essentially perform authentication in about a line of code from your client apps across popular social identity providers like Microsoft Account, Facebook, Twitter, and Google. We provide nice, clean APIs for sending push notifications. So if you've ever sent push notifications across some of these platforms, you'll know that they're all different. Typically, it requires you to know how to compose the notification payload, the XML templates that are required in most cases, or JSON templates in some cases, and the auth processes around them. With mobile services, we make it incredibly easy to actually do that, and you'll see that today. We've got a scheduler, so this allows you to run jobs on a periodic basis. We'll see an example of that as well today, and I'll talk more about that. We've got logging and diagnostics, so this is a core tenant to anything on Azure, really, as well as the capability to scale out. So quite a lot of functionality here already. We released in, as I said, it was August, I believe, last year, and that was just supporting Windows Store applications. And since then, we've gone and added all of these building blocks, essentially, for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. So it's something that we're iterating on very rapidly, and it's certainly something that you can expect a lot more of support and functionality to come within as the months progress. So let's build our first mobile service. So this is the getting started demo. So who here has actually used Windows Azure before? A couple guys, okay. Who here has created a mobile service before? Okay, a couple guys. All right, so mobile services is available within the Windows Azure portal here. And if we hit new compute, mobile service, create, and this is essentially a wizard that's going to spin up this mobile service for us. So if I say tech days NL, this is going to be a subdomain for us, so our unique endpoint on azure-mobile.net. The next thing that we can do is we can either choose to use an existing DB or choose to create a new database as the backing store for all of your data. You can do this on the free trial, or you can do it on your subscriptions. And one thing I should note in actual fact is you get 10 mobile services running in shared mode for free, like today. So if you've got an Azure account, you get that out of the box. So everything that we're going to do today, apart from the scale bit you're going to have to pay, but everything we do today, you can actually go off and do for free. So let me hit next here. So deployment-wise, currently we've only rolled it out to these four data centers. There's still one more in Asia, one more in Europe, and two more in the US that we need to roll out to. Most recently, we rolled out to the East Asia data center there. So that's only lit up about a week ago as well. So this is going to be my DB that I'm creating now. So I'm configuring which server do I want to deploy that to. And I'll deploy it to this one in North Europe. And I hit OK. When my password validates, there we go. All right, so with this now, what's happening is we've got mobile services and its provisioning engine going off and creating that DB for me. It's also going to go and spin up my web tier such that I can start utilizing my mobile services to do things like the data auth and push notifications that we just talked about. So this typically takes about 20 seconds. I've tried to figure what the best thing to do is for this, and normally I dance or do karaoke, so which would you like to see?
Dance?
Okay. Oh, there we go. Thankfully, don't have to do karaoke. We may do it later on, though, if we have to wait for something. So this is my mobile service already. A little dance, and it's done. So now I can click in, and I can already start consuming this. So what I'm presented with initially here is the quick start. So this guy here is a quick start, and you can see that we actually support all of these platforms. So pretty cool, right, for a Microsoft product to actually, you know, support other platforms like iOS and Android. And that's part of what we're trying to do with mobile services, is make it easy for people to build a common backend across all these platforms. So what we'll do is we're going to focus on Windows Store, but I'm going to start with Android because that's a little bit slower for me to spin up in the emulator here. So this quick start here essentially is the first thing you should do when you create your first mobile service. It's going to provide you something packaged out of the box that will communicate with your service tier. So you need to install the Android SDK. We need to create a table. Now this create table button is essentially going off and provisioning me a table in this view here. So once that finishes, we should see it turn up here. Let me refresh the page. I don't think they have like a socket-based implementation that's going to show it up on the page there. And there's the to-do-item table created. So this is where our data is going to be stored. So let's just return to this and download the sample app here. You can do it. I'm using a trackpad here. I lost my mouse somewhere. If you see it, please hand it in. So let me download this guy. Drop it in my dev folder. Lots of clicks, isn't there? Okay. Let's do this A for Android. Okay, so there's my Android one downloading. Let's download a Phone 8 one. Save this guy into the same folder. Drop it there. And let's download a Windows Store one. Bam. Download. And we'll call this Windows Store. Okay. Dev. All right, so let's extract these guys. We'll start with Android. That will do. All right. What is this? This is Eclipse. Amazing. It's a Microsoft presentation, right? So let me try and remember how to import this thing here. Import, there it is. Hit next. Going to browse to that directory which we just extracted to, dev. And we'll say it's in NL. I probably should have named it like A or something, shouldn't I? Just so I didn't have to scroll as much. Let's import this guy. And now what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to kick this guy off and have it start deploying while we do our other cool stuff. So I've already got the emulator up here. Hopefully it is alive. Yep. Amazing. I just did a keynote at Tech Days Belgium with Android and Windows Store applications yesterday. So I was there hoping, please don't have the emulator for Android crash, because it took me like 7 minutes to spin up, which is why it's pre-spun up here in this case. So let's spin up Windows Phone as well. If we go to, that was this one, extract you out. You can do it, Nick. Missing my mouse right now. Extract you. Okay, let's open this guy. And let's lastly open the Windows Store one. Extract that. Can my machine handle all this? We will see. Okay. So what I'd like to do is just to spin this up so you guys can see what it actually is here. I'll kick off the phone one first, I think, which is this one, because the phone 8 emulator will take a little while to start. Lots of progress bars. I know, I'm sorry. It'll get cooler. We'll start writing some code in a little bit. You can do it. This only has 4 gigs of memory. So this is the Windows Phone one. Let's kick that off. Let's jump into the Windows Store one. Over here, hit run. All right, so this is a downloaded template pre-configured to talk to that mobile service. And essentially, what it is it's a to-do list application, because we're very creative in what we build for our sample applications, and this is what we could think of. So on the left side here, you see we can add a to-do item, and on the right side there, you can see that you can query and update your data. So if I said do data demo, hit save, what's actually happening here now is that's taking that item and it's going and it's actually stored that within my mobile service already. So I've already done the data demo, so I can close that off. But today we'll actually talk about data, and we'll talk about auth. And let's spin up to one of our other platforms here. Phone is 7 is starting. Here we go. Let's say auth, what else are we doing? Push. I'll do dash A, so you know this is from Android. Data, auth, push, scheduler. Let's hit add here, and we'll say scale. Page down. Now, if we were using push with raw notifications, we could actually make all these screens sync as that item is added. But at the moment, I'm just going to do a poll-based implementation. So you can see now, across both of these device platforms and my Windows Store app here, if I hit refresh, you can see now, hey, we've got a common backend across these three device platforms. I would do iOS, but I don't own a Mac, so I apologize. But yeah, we've got the same client SDK for that. So what we should really do here is look at what does the code actually look like to start interacting with this mobile service. Before I do that, let's just show you that, hey, the data actually really is up in the cloud. So here's my to-do item table. You can see it's got 6 records. If I click in, you can see there's all the data that we've just gotten added. Pretty cool, right? What do you think? Just had lunch. Some people are sleeping. It's all right. I expect audience participation. All right. So that's that. Let's look at the code. Let's go to Win8. To start with, because we'll be focusing on that predominantly today. So what this does out of the box is it uses the client SDK for mobile services. Now, the gateway or the client proxy for consuming your mobile service is all wrapped within this mobile services client class. You can see here that it's actually gone and basically said, this is our endpoint that we're using, and this is our application key. Now, all of these values are actually available for you within the portal. So if you've got an existing app rather than downloading a sample app, right, you can actually come and pull these credentials from here. This is connect an existing app and go drop it into your client app and then start working with it. So that's our client proxy, but how do we actually perform, say, those inserts, the updates, and the querying against our mobile service? So we've been mindful in creating these client SDKs to essentially try and make it as easy as possible for the end user to go and interact with that mobile service. So we don't want you to have to go and deal with HTTP client or a HTTP web request or something like that. We've gone and wrapped that and abstracted it out to turn it into a nice clean API so you can essentially get the benefits of a back-end solution, but then have a really easy client implementation to go and utilize that. On top of that, then, that means you can focus your dev efforts on making your client UX experience, you know, very impressive to compete with the other apps that are out there in store. So to go and consume this service, we need a to-do item, right? Now, this to-do item matches the name of the table. So by convention, you need to have your class match the table name. You can mark this up with the data table attribute if you've got, say, a DBA or something that wants you to prefix every table with TBL or something like that. But on top of this, every class must have an ID. In this case, we've got a text and a complete field. Now, we're marking this up with data member because for our server scripts, we're writing in JS, and convention-wise, using lowercase t is best up there. So we'll see that in a bit. But that's our entity for serializing over the wire. Now, to go and start consuming this service, we use that mobile service instance that we had in our app, XAMLCS. We call getTable. We tell it we want a handle to the to-do item type. And then to perform an insert, it's simply one line of code, to-do table, insert, pass in the item. Query, again, where, pass in a link expression, and that's going to form a query, post it over the wire, and pull back your result set. And lastly, update, one line. And if I could edit, delete, again, one line of code, all async. Pretty cool, right? Very easy. That's why this is level 200. I remember, did anyone watch me here last year? No? Okay, last year I was doing like a level 300 and there was crazy amounts of code, but this mobile services, it makes it incredibly easy for you. So less challenging, you know, but you can pump out solutions a lot faster. So Windows Phone looks exactly the same as this. So I think that's this one still running here. So again, same mobile services client class, if I scroll down a little. There you go, you can see it there. And as far as the API is concerned, again, identical. To-do table, insert. What about Android? So if we expand out the libs here, you can see there's our client SDK. And if I expand out my source here, find this guy. Again, mobile services client. There's our endpoint and key. Scroll down, and we should be able to find an insert here somewhere. An update, that'll do. But you can see, again, we've tried to streamline it, make it extremely easy across all platforms, not just our own. So that's mobile services and structured storage out of the box, very turnkey, very easy to implement. So let's return to the deck here and start walking through. So, okay, it looks like we're good. So structured storage, what is actually underlying that? It's a SQL database. We're not using Azure Table Storage or anything like that. So being a Windows Azure SQL database, you can still connect to it with, say, SQL Management Studio or those types of things, those tools if you want to. There was the option there when we were creating our mobile service to use an existing DB. That's there for essentially allowing you to have a database that's somewhat multi-tenant in terms of you can have 1, 2, 10 mobile services all pointing at that same DB. But one of the common questions I get asked is, hey, if I've got a to-do item table across each of these mobile services and they're using the same DB, how are we actually stopping, you know, any collision or conflict within that to-do item? And we just do that by schema. So if I had mobile service app X and mobile service app Y, it's just a schema. And part of the provisioning process, we actually provision a user that only has access to that schema. So it's secure and partitions out the data like that as well. In terms of managing the data, you can do it from within the portal. You could use the SQL portal if you want a web experience. You can use SQL Management Studio. You can code directly against the REST APIs that we expose within the mobile service, or you can use the CLI tools if you want to do some sort of automation of, you know, managing that data or actually going off and provisioning tables or deploying scripts and those sorts of things. So what are these service scripts? So it's essentially a way for you to author script that will execute in the CRUD operation pipeline. So any client application that has a web tier, you're typically doing things on there that are implementing, you know, your own custom business logic or validation. So say if validation's the case, we may want to validate our entities on both the client and server side. So that's what service scripts is about. And with mobile services, we've got a number of modules that you can utilize. I haven't listed them all here. Mobile services actually runs under Node. So you've got a number of Node modules like crypto, request, and things like that. And you can make use of them in your server-side scripts. But these are some of the most common ones for people just getting started. So there's a request module which you can use to perform HTTP outbound to perhaps third-party services if you need to call a web service of a third-party company or whatnot. There's a console object if you want to do logging to go and debug or diagnose issues with your scripts. There's a push namespace, which we'll cover today, but all your push notification goodness is in there. Tables object for dealing with tables, like reading, writing, and querying. Reading and querying, same thing. You know, basically just going and working with that, but abstracted higher, where you're using JavaScript as opposed to writing T-SQL. The MS SQL object gives you the capability to actually write SQL and execute it. This is what it looks like. It's a very simple query. I show it here because we actually don't use this object at all today. We just use tables. But you could go and, say, execute a stored procedure that you've written, for instance, using this method if you wanted to. It's a bunch of status codes. You can utilize the Windows Azure Node SDK if you want to integrate with, say, Windows Azure queues or tables or blob storage. And we've got a number of store partners like Pusher, SendGrid, and Twilio that out of the box have modules that are available within mobile services. So let's have a look at a simple script or server script. Any questions so far? More dancing? Get you guys live? Okay. let's see what we got here. Was there a question there? Sorry. I couldn't, no, okay. Hearing things. I was awake for 20 hours yesterday. It was horrible. All right, so I remember what I was doing now. Let's go to the data tab, click into to-do item. So there's our data, right? But we've also got these other menus here, and we're going to write some server script. So I'm going to implement this very basic validation here. So I've say if item.text.length. So this is where that attribute that we looked at comes into play. Let me close some of these guys. Otherwise, I'm going to spend a long time switching all the time. Let me come up. So that's where our data member, essentially turning it into lowercase, comes into play. So we're serializing the entity up in JSON. And if I return back to my portal here, you can say item.text. So the item is actually the item that's been pushed up to this insert operation. You can write scripts across all your CRUD operations here. We'll just do insert. So if this is less than 5, then what I'd like to do is to say request. Now this request parameter allows you to do things like request.execute will go and insert that item, or you can respond to write to the response stream. And in this case, since this is probably invalid, we can say status codes.bad request. We say too short. Right. Else, it meets my very strict business rules here. And we're going to go and insert this. Now, if you're getting started with authoring script here, the best thing I can show you is this contextual help. It'll have contextual help here on how to do a lot of the things that we're going to show you today. So it's worth looking at if you're getting stuck. There's also a whole bunch of reference material on MSDN. That's okay. So hit save. And with that, this is now live. So nothing more to do, no publish from Visual Studio live within the portal. If people want to hear about how we can, you know, source control these things, we can talk about that perhaps in the Q&A time. But basically, you can edit them locally in your editor of choice. put them into TFS or GitHub, whatever you want, and then use the CLI tools to publish these scripts up to prod. Okay, so with that, it's live. Let's spin up our Win8 application, and we'll see that this is now going to allow us to validate this. So let's do 5. So this will work. Go back and hit 4. Now this will exception out, and it's going to have our too short status response code here, and we've got a mobile service invalid operation exception, which you can handle to do whatever you want. So pretty cool, right? What do you think? Sort of powerful? Simple, but cool. So let's move on. So we've got a lot of content here. Let's go straight into push. So push notifications, as you're probably aware, on Windows 8, Windows Phone, and other platforms, they're something that basically allows you to interact with your end users when they may not be utilizing your application. And in the context of Windows 8 and Windows Phone, this is extremely important to our application ecosystem. The tiles on your start screen are the gateway to your application. If you're pushing live and relevant content to those, you're ultimately going to draw your users back into your app and provide them that additional value that perhaps will have them keep your application rather than uninstalling it and going somewhere else. So to send a push notification, there's a simple 3-step process, but sometimes can get a little bit confusing, so I like to basically walk through what that is before we go and implement it in code. So everything in blue are things that we need to worry about as application developers. Everything in green is provided out of the box for you. So if we let's start this process. So we need to write the stuff in blue and obviously interface with the things in green. So first thing, your application code needs to request a channel from the client notification platform. And this is just a simple WinRT API call. This channel uniquely identifies your application tile, and it provides you a means to target a notification payload at that tile. On top of this, we can send more than just tiles. We can send toasts, raw notifications, or badge updates. But once we have this channel URI, our service needs to know about this such that it can send updated information down to it, right? So we take that and we register it with our cloud service. And then the next thing that we need to do is our cloud service needs to determine when we want to send a push notification. If we're building a weather service, we may be going out and polling some meteorology API or service and determining, hey, Nick's interested in Redmond weather, there's a change in forecast, I'm going to send a push notification. When your service determines it's time to send this notification, you grab that channel and then you compose a notification and push it. Now, to do that, you actually have to authenticate against the Windows push notification service in this case, and then compose your payload and post it at that channel. WNS will take that payload and deliver it down to the notification client platform on Windows 8, and then it will deal with surfacing that payload as a tile or a toast or whatever you've determined it should be. And that's the basic notification lifecycle. Request channel, register it, authenticate and push. And it's much the same across other client platforms as well. So within the Windows Store context and mobile services, we integrate with WNS to provide toast tile badge and raw notification support. As far as the authentication piece is concerned, has anyone delivered notifications to Windows Store apps yet? No one? One person? How did you do it? Did you write all the auth code yourself and deal with the XML templates? How long did it take? Too long, right, okay. So we're gonna do it in like 15 minutes, end to end. So it is actually reasonably complicated. There's a lot of code to write. The key thing that we're doing here with mobile services is abstracting away that complexity and providing you a simple API. So for the auth piece, you simply need to provide your credentials to the portal and then use our API to send a notification. So for Windows Store apps, everything related to push is within the push.wns namespace. For Windows Phone apps, push.mpns. iOS apps, push.apns. And Android apps, push.gcm for Google Cloud Messaging System. So let's jump to a demo. I like to do demos because that's where I like to be rather than in slides. Who agrees? Yeah, okay, cool. All devs in the room or do we have business people or no? Okay, cool. Very good. I like you already. You can stay. All right, so let's, I'm just going to kill this Windows Phone one. I need the memory, right? Let's get rid of this as well. Get rid of this. Okay, and you can go too. All right, here we go. So, first thing we need to do on our Windows Store application to send this push notification is the client config. Right, so we've got configuration parts for our service tier and client tier, and then we do the request, register, push. So to request a channel, we need to configure our client, we need to do a few small things. I want to send a wide tile later on, so I'm going to specify a wide tile logo for my application. If we look at it here now, there it is, TechDays NL. You can see that it's just square, it's just got the default logo. But we'd like to send wide tiles because they're sort of cool. So what I'll do is I'll come in here and I'll select a default template. Now, through many years of study and academic work, this is the best artistic piece I can create, but I am a reasonable developer. So let's use this. And so now I've got a default wide tile logo. We want to send Toast notifications. So in VS Update 1, Toast Capable is default now. If you're not using Update 1, you should be. And you can update it through VS here. So if you're not using Update 1 and you want Toast, you need to set the dropdown. So that's our client config almost done. The last thing we need to do is get our client credentials for WNS. And to do this, we just right-click on the project and associate up with store, hit sign in, and we'll see some... hopefully a login page here in a second. So this is actually going to go once I sign in and pull all of the store apps that I've got in my Windows Store dashboard under my Windows Store account. Now typically you'd have to go and create a Windows Store app or registration to do this. I've pre-done it just to save a minute or so. But we'll get this app list, and then I'll register this with the store, and then we'll get our client credentials. So let's use one which I created yesterday. You can see a number of beer o'clock applications for those ones late in the day. Let's use Tech Days Mobile. Hit Next. So these are our client credentials. Hit Associate, and that's going to go and update my package manifest. So that's the client piece almost done. Now, we'll jump into the actual steps that we need to do, which is request a channel on the client. To do that, I'm hooking into the onLaunched because your application needs to, or it's recommended to, request a channel every time the application launches. And that's because channels expire, typically every 30 days, but if WNS is under memory pressure or whatnot, it can go and purge some of those channels that it's retaining within its own system. So request a channel every time your application launches is the guidance we give. Now, I've prepared some snippets here, so you don't have to watch me code the whole session. Although I'd prefer to do that, we wouldn't cover as much ground. So let me resolve these first, and then we'll walk through the code here. And we need a little DTO here, and I'm just going to call this channel. Now, this is somewhat simplified because I just want to communicate the basic concepts and the channel UI being the important thing here. But on channel, we actually also have an expiry time, and that's the expiration that I was telling you about before. So you should really track that and utilize it in your server-side code. But today, we're just going to use the URI. So the first thing we do, WinRT API under networking, push notification channel manager, create push notification for application async. Best longest name almost in the whole WinRT API. There is one longer, and you will be happy to know it's from the same team for secondary tile async. I don't know. It's very descriptive, but I'm glad you got like control space in Visual Studio now. Otherwise, it would be not too fun to type that guy out. But what this does is it requests that channel URI, and it returns back a channel object. I'm taking that and stuffing this into my DTO. So this is just my entity for serialization. So the key thing here is passing up that channel URI. We'll talk about this in a second, but it's better to just look at it in the context of this. Let's pretend this is the first time the application's running. This local settings state bag is going to be null. So in this case, I'm going to insert my channel into my mobile service. Now, the primary key in your mobile service is an int identity-based seeded one, so it's going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So after you perform your first insert, mobile services will actually, and the client SDK, will rehydrate your entity here to set that ID to the value that was assigned on the server side. So in this case, I'm saying now let's set that local setting to the ID, which is probably 1 in this case. And then let's say our application closes, we come back, next time we're running, this local setting is going to have a value of 1, so we're just going to simply perform an update. This is simple. I don't know what to say. You're all developers. Why did I just explain all of this? You knew this 4 seconds after you saw the code, right? No, but basically this is to ensure that you don't have duplicate channel registrations up in your mobile service. Otherwise, from an efficiency perspective, you're going to be posting the same payloads at that same channel. So just simply means you've got one line in there for the channel for this client app. That's the client done. Let's go and work on the server. Come back. We're in the data tab. We need a channel table to store this. Now, this will go and create our channel table. No one here has asked yet, how does it know what columns to create within the DB? We didn't go and create any schema for this, right? So if you look at this one, we go and hit the columns here, and you'll see that there's only one column. And what we have is mobile services, and if we go and look at this one, which was originally the same, you'll see it's got all the columns have been gone and sort of created for us. Basically what this is, it's called dynamic schema, and we'll interrogate the entity that you're passing up and determine what columns should be scaffolded off the properties of that entity. So it means really you don't need to go and deal with T-SQL at all either, unless you want to. You can turn it off, of course, but in many cases for development cycles, it's easy just to leave it on. It does it all for you, saves you time. So we've got our channel. Next thing we need to do is do the little bit of config here to give our credentials for our server piece. So what we've got here is our Windows application credentials. If you're doing APNS, you've got the certificate available there. If you're doing Google Cloud Messaging, you can put in your API key. We're only interested in this today. So let me go to my store portal. That's Twitter. Let's do this one. So now we're actually going to go and grab the server-side credentials from the Windows Store. And I need to make sure that the app that I'm using here matches up with the one that I associated to the client code, which was TechDays Mobile. So I select this, go into Advanced Features, go into Push Notifications. Our server is having a problem. Well, we can blame this on the live team. You can do it. Let's just try again. That doesn't make for a fun demo, does it? There we go. Go into authenticating your service, and at multiple levels of depth, you find these secret keys. They're trying to keep them secret by hiding them so much. But we'll try to make sure that they make them a bit easier to find. That's some feedback that they're probably already working on. And we just take these and we paste them into the portal. So in terms of authentication, for you over there, hello. So the auth piece, that's your auth piece, right? You don't have to go and do that handshake with WNS, get the bearer token back, and then stuff that into an auth header to send your notification. So it's all done for us. So really, the last thing we have left now, we've configured our client server. We've requested a channel, we've posted it or registered it to the server. The next thing is to send that push. Now to do that, we simply come into our to-do item table in this case. I'm just going to make it send a push notification on insert. There are other ways to do it. We'll see that a bit later on. So I'm going to, so this is essentially an event-based push. Maybe useful for messaging systems. If you're inserting a message to one user, you could pull that user's channel and then push a toast notification to them, say. So let's use my ninja snippets here. Drop that in, and let's walk through it. So what I've done here is I've essentially taken this insert operation, and I've executed the request to save that item that I'm passing up, in this case a to-do item. On success, I respond to the client, so it can immediately go off and do what it wants to do. So that just writes to the response stream. And then I go off and I send a push notification for the item that was just added. So if we come here, we're using the tables object that we talked about. We're just simply getting a handle to it here. Then we read the channels, and that'll pass in on success a collection of channels. Iterate through each channel, and as we pull out each one, push it into this function, which simply, to send your push notification, uses one line of code. And in this case, push.wns send toast text 04. It's targeted at our channel URI, and we're providing this template type requires three lines of text. We're providing the item text as our first line, and then a couple extra sort of fill out lines here. Hit save. Let it save, and we'll return to our app. Okay. And then, audience participation, what would you like to send via a push notification? You, sir.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Okay. Okay. There we go. Got to use smileys, right? So on saving this, it's saved. Hopefully, we'll see a toast turn up in a second. Come on, man, you're in my demo. I wonder if it's just getting buffered by WNS. So we can actually go and check in on this, sort of. Let's. This happened yesterday, and I waited like a minute before it arrived. But what can happen is if WNS is under pressure, it can take a minute or two to deliver. So it's not made for, you know, extremely real-time sort of comms. So on success here, we can say execute a function. Let me think here. Success function be a response console.log r. Else there's an error because we may have pasted something wrong. E. Hopefully my JS is all right here. Hit save. And let's try this again. Did my channel come up? We should probably check that. Browse. Interesting. Didn't get my channel. Let's run this again. So it didn't have anything to post to. Hit F10. Oops. Keyboard doesn't have a proper F10. Channel URI, are you there today? Hello, that's good. I know what happened. I used the currently executing app rather than hitting F5 on this guy, I think. Did I? I don't know. Got an ID. So this should be good this time. Ninja piano skills. There you go. Ta-da! What do you think? Pretty cool? Easy. You got to see some real-time troubleshooting. So what I'd like to show you here is in our logs tab now. That's a good way to diagnose scripts, essentially, console.log. So if we select this, you can see that, hey, it was successful in this case. And if we go and click details here, you can see the response that's come back from WNS. So in this case, it's saying it's received the notification. Received means that WNS has got it. It hasn't not necessarily handed it off to the client yet. But it means, hey, I've got it, and I'm going to try and deliver it. It's targeted at this channel, and there's some extra trace information here. But you can do things here like request for device status, so you can see if the device is temporarily offline or offline disconnected. And using those things, if you're trying to implement an efficient push scenario, you should really look at those status codes that are coming back and perhaps exponentially back off on sending push notifications if that channel's offline. Bit of extra info there for you. So with that, I think we're up to our next piece here, which is auth. So as far as auth is concerned, we integrate directly with these four social identity providers, Microsoft Account, Twitter, Facebook, Google. Haven't said that before. I'm getting good at it. Now, if you've got a web tier, typically you want to secure it, right? And with mobile device applications, that's sort of the next stumbling block that people who are building their first mobile app kind of hit. It's like, you know, I know I should have this service tier locked down and people should be authenticated against it, but not really sure how to do that. So out of the box, what we're doing here is trying to make it easy to do that as well. Now, you can restrict permissions on each of your tables at the granularity of each CRUD operation. And the four options we have are everyone, anyone with an app key, only authenticated users, or only scripts and admins. Now, by default, we set it to only anyone with the app key which we saw when we instantiated the mobile services client. We're going to roll to only authenticated users. If you want to provide more granular sort of control there, perhaps some authorization policies, in your server scripts, there's a user entity that's passed in, and you can use user.level to see if they're admin, authenticated, or anonymous, or you can use user.userid if you want to go and see, you know, the unique ID that's been returned from, say, Twitter or Facebook. So let's jump to a demo now. Come across to the identity tab. Now you'll see here, we basically just provide our credentials for each of these providers. You can support all four for a single client app. We've only got time to do one today. So let me open this guy. And let's go to my Twitter dev API. So the first step is really just creating a new Twitter application. So we'll name it something interesting. This is a demo, shameless plug. All of those three don't matter so much. Well, they sort of do. This will show up in the client auth login that we see. So it should probably match your application name if they want to trust you. But the most important thing here is really the callback URL. And this callback URL as part of the OAuth flow needs to have the actual URL of your mobile service. So you can get that from your mobile service here. If you forget what it is, you can always go to the dashboard tab and select it out like this. We'll just come across and drop this guy in. Next, we come down and we will actually read all of this and then agree. And then we tried to do the capture control here. 422 DIESFERE. I think that's right, because that makes sense. So hitting create here, that'll sort of create our Twitter application and give us the credentials that we require to put within our portal. And then simply we go and restrict permissions on our table, and then we need to write code to essentially provide a login dialog that uses Twitter on our client application, right? Ta-da! That is not fun. Tell me that it made you. This is where you wish you use a reasonable name for these things so you can find it. So let's try again. Let's sorry guys. I don't know why we dropped that. Maybe connection related or maybe Twitter related. Drop this in. Agree again. Now we have to try and do this again. BROADERL. That looks like a D, doesn't it? I've actually got really good at this. Ta-da! There we go. Now we can take our consumer key, come over here, go back to our identity tab, scroll down, drop in the consumer key, drop in the service secret. So just like that, this will go and save our change. So now we've got our keys required to perform a successful Twitter auth. We simply need to go and restrict our service. Returning to the data tab, I want to say, hey, let's go over to permissions and perhaps say on insert, I only want authenticated users. Same with updates, same with delete. Read permissions, perhaps, you know, you may want to put things public. I'm just going to keep it all consistent here. The one which I will call out, though, is only scripts and admins. That essentially means that only a script within your mobile service can execute that operation. The admins piece means only anyone with the master key from your mobile service can perform that operation. So perhaps you will be using the master key with some CLI tools. And where you can get that from is back on the dashboard here. Hit manage keys, and there's your master key there. So that's a useful piece of information. But essentially, just by changing those drop-downs, our client application, or our service tier, I should say, is now secure and requires authenticated users. So this will exception out. And there it goes. I'm unauthorized. So the next piece is to say, hey, we need our client app to actually authenticate against Twitter and pass or essentially complete the authentication flow that's required. Who here has used the web authentication broker for Windows Store apps? Anyone? No? Okay. Web authentication broker is WinRT control that allows you to surface a common and consistent page for authenticating against services like Facebook, Twitter, your custom solution, perhaps forms-based authentication or whatnot. But essentially, that requires about sort of 10 to 50 lines of code, depending on what you're doing. And in most cases there, you need to embed your client secret on that client side unless you've set up your own service tier. So in this case, we wrap all of that, and we provide, again, a reasonably nice API for authenticating with these identity providers. So to do that, async operation. New keyboard. Awesome. Okay. Await. We use our app mobile service. Again, that's our gateway or our client proxy to our mobile service. We want to log in our service authentication provider and simply just provide the appropriate enum to log in. Can't get any easier, right? It could figure it out for us, maybe, but essentially we're going to use Twitter. If you wanted to support all four of those, just configure the server side and the appropriate apps in the identity providers, and then provide perhaps a switch statement behind a list view that uses the appropriate login. And with that, we can now log in. So log in. And is that right? No, maybe not. I wouldn't tell you guys anyhow. Okay, let me put the proper one in here. Okay. All right. Now we're authenticated. We can go off and we can go and consume our mobile service in an authenticated fashion. Last thing I want to show you here quickly for the auth piece is if I return to my data tab here and do something like, say, script, and then we'll drop in, see this user object. With authenticated users, we can now do things like item.userid. This is going to dynamically create an item property on a user ID property on our item and scaffold that using dynamic schema. Hit save on that. Come back to our client app. User will be there. Hit save. And return to my table here. You see there's our user ID, and we can now see that, hey, this is my Twitter ID. So with this, you can then start doing even more interesting things, right? We can go and say, go to read. Perhaps we want users to only see the data that's attributed to them. So we could say query.where, provider filter, user ID is equal to user.user ID. Close. There we go. Lose points for formatting. There we go. And now let's go back to this guy and hit refresh. So if you recall, only the last item had my user ID on it. So there we go. Filtering data, one line of code. Authentication, one line of code. Securing your service tier and tables, a couple of drop-downs, and some config. What do you reckon? Cool? All right. I'm working, by the end of this, we're going to be like working really well together, going to get lots of interaction. You're already doing better than I was doing in Belgium, actually. So, but I hear culturally, they say that they don't interact much with the presenters over there. But I worked on them, and we got there. We got a question. So, let's keep going. So I've just done the auth demo. And now let's talk about the scheduler. So far we've been really interacting with sort of our CRUD operations, and for all scenarios, that's not really the way that you want to be, making things happen. You don't really always want an event-based kind of thing, to like an insert, to cause some action to occur. So the scheduler provides us a means to essentially go off and perform actions on a periodic basis. So a really good example of this would be the weather monitoring solution, which we talked about earlier. I want to poll that third-party service, and when I determine there's a change in the weather that we're interested in, then I'll go and react to that. So that's really what the scheduler is about, is giving you a periodic interval where you can execute script. So some other examples there, purging old data. Perhaps you want to go and delete all expired channels. Processing or resizing images and writing them to blob storage is another thing you could be doing there. And the last one here, this one, scheduling. Yeah, schedule a push notification to be sent at a given time of day. Really, these are some of the things that I come up with, but you're only limited by your imagination. You're executing a script, so you can do whatever you want. Another cool example for this would be sort of a news aggregator or RSS feed reader type solution, where you pull the latest feeds, perhaps send an update so the client has an updated tile that says, hey, there's 10 new things unread. Two ways to execute this, on a schedule or on demand. We'll see both of them in this demo. All right. So let's jump back and jump into the scheduler tab here. What's the primary language spoken here, if you don't mind me asking? Dutch? So if you were not aware, we actually also have language support for Dutch in the portal here. Did I select German? I apologize. What's that? Did I just do a bad thing? Is that not Dutch? Are you joking? Dutch. Okay, sorry, I'm not very well traveled. So at the moment, we don't support Dutch. I apologize. But it is one thing that we're actually actively working on, and we just released, say, support for Russian, and I'm sure Dutch will turn up there in the future. But keep an eye out on that option, all right? And then you did not see any of my huge offensive thing that I just did there, but and still, now I can't get back to English. I tried doing this in Spanish in Belgium. So let's return this to a state.
It's in a local language.
Pardon?
It's written in a local language, so you're forgiven.
Okay. Thank you.
This would say Netherlands.
Okay. Yes. I should never have shown you this because okay, my internet connection has died here. It's gonna be good for the rest of the demos. Oh, amazing. Imagine, if you will, a computer connected to the interwebs with access to the Windows Azure portal. Let's see what's going on here. Is the access point working? Do you guys have it here, or is it somewhere else? Okay. Great. All right, I apologize. Let's see what we can do here. Try reconnecting. Someone's probably gone, because we got this one added, because this machine doesn't have a Ethernet jack. So someone's probably gone and said, hey, what was this access point doing connected here? Let's go and unplug that and take it away. But, not cool. Sorry. There we go. Amazing. Thankfully, I can stop sweating now. That's when we would have played karaoke while we waited for someone to reconnect it for us. Still in German. Yeah, it wouldn't have persisted that change. Let me roll this out. Clemens would be very happy that I did that by accident. He'd be laughing at me right now if he was in the room. Probably would have saved me. So let's go here. Okay. Netherlands, scheduler. Okay, let's do this. Create a job. Let's call it check feeds. We're going to execute on a schedule. If you want it on any other interval, simply select the drop down. If you want to run it on demand, such as log in, run it, you know, randomly when you feel the need, select on demand. You can obviously change these after you've done it. And what you can do is you can do that here in the portal. So let's go to the script tab. And what we'll do is we will take some code here. No one's asked how my ninja snippets work, right? That's just a favorite in IE. So anyone want to guess? What's that? True. Maybe. I do. Hold on, what are these guys doing down here? There we go. Much better. Okay. All right. So, no, you've got to test cross-browser when you're doing web dev, right? So check feeds is our entry point, and that entry point needs to match the name of the scheduled job which we created. If it doesn't, you're going to see a whole bunch of errors. So what I'm doing here is I'm using the request module, and I'm essentially calling out to the Twitter API to say, get me the last two tweets at CloudNick. Once I get a response here, I parse out the results. If there is a collection of results, I iterate through each of those tweets, and I call send notification with the tweet text there. If anyone is going to tweet right now, please make sure it's appropriate to be on recorded media. Because what we're doing is we're taking the same channel table, same thing we saw before, iterating through all the channels, and we're using this, send tile wide small image text 04. Now this is a tiled template. There's many templates to represent all these different configurations of tiles that you see on the screen here. You've got wide ones, square ones, ones with text, ones with images and combinations thereof. And these are all documented in the mobile services reference materials, which are available on windowsazure.com. Now, the key thing I'm doing here is targeting the channel, taking the tweet, I'm pulling your profile image URL, I'm taking your user alias so we know who you are, and then I'm going to put the tweet text up. So in doing that, we can hit save. And in any second here, that will be there, live, ready to go. Now, by default, it's disabled. So once this is done, we now need to enable this guy. And now this will run every 15 minutes on the 15-minute interval. So the next run will be at 5:30 a.m. on my machine in 12 minutes' time, or it's executing on the server side. So, any questions while we wait? Yep. Yep. Yeah, right. So yeah, we've had the most granular you can set it at is every 15 minutes, and that's certainly some feedback we've had, and I'm glad you've raised it because we'll roll that back in as well. There is a user voice forum for mobile services, so if you go there, you should be able to find an item to upvote that. Yeah, definitely. So that's feedback that we've taken on board, and the more people like to vocalize that through our user voice forum, there's a link for it at the end, the better we are at delivering things that you guys want for your solutions. So we actually were executing in a very agile fashion on the mobile services team, and if you want a feature, it's a matter of voting it for it or proposing it, and then it'll be basically taken in and sort of validated. Is this something we should do, you know, immediately or somewhere later on the roadmap? But the key thing is your voice is actually heard, so please do that. So I think we've got a few minutes left. Let's do some karaoke. Right. Good question. Yes. I cannot comment. That's a good question and good feedback as well. It's certainly something people have asked for, is a scheduled service within Azure. So yes, good feedback. At the moment, today, the way you'd resolve that, if you're doing something outside of mobile services, is that you'd use a worker role, and you'd basically set that worker role up to execute and then sleep for whatever interval you wanted. But yes, good feature. would be a good service. And
so no common post it's coming?
I can't sort of disclose roadmap, so it may or may not be. But yes, I'll take that feedback and I'll provide it. So certainly good. At the moment, if you want baked-in scheduler like this, you can do it with mobile services, else it's a worker role in a cloud service. And, you know, to sleep, you know, thread.sleep, wait for 15 minutes, execute your task again. That's a workaround for you. So I'm not going to make you guys wait. I was just trying to get some audience interaction. We can use the on-demand. So let's press run once here. And now that's run. Let's return back to my beautiful image here. And we'll wait for it to be delivered. And there we go. So we've got a couple tweets coming in. So with that, we've polled the Twitter API on a scheduled script. We ran it on demand, but every 15 minutes now I'll get updates from you guys. And it's composed a tile notification here with the Twitter person's profile image and the tweets. Nice stuff. I'll slow clap you guys in. All right. So you could imagine, you know, there's a lot of, it looks very simple, but we've done a lot of the hard work and heavy lifting for you. And that's really what mobile services is about. I've certainly built solutions like this prior to mobile services, and it does take a lot of time and effort to do them. So really worth considering if you want to accelerate your application development. So let's return to the deck here. Talk about Windows Azure Store partners. So the Windows Azure Store is something reasonably new. There's actually a whole bunch of partners in there. These three here are specifically integrated at the moment with mobile services. So that means there's a module that you can use within your mobile service to do things like send emails with SendGrid, text messaging with Twilio, or you know, utilize a WebSocket implementation using Pusher. Now, we can do a demo of SendGrid here. So what I'd like to do is jump back. I should just delete my slides, right? It's always one slide demo. I'm getting there. But I feel perhaps it gives you some value if you can see it on slide format. If that's not true, tweet to me. Don't present slides anymore, just do all demos, and I'd happily give that feedback to my manager. All right, so we're in the portal here. Going to have to change the zoom level a little bit. And if we go down to this guy, which is add-ons, you'll see that we've got the Azure Store. So within the store, I can come and I can select items here. Now, not all of them are integrated deeply into mobile services. There's a lot of things here which you can use within any asset you have on Windows Azure, be it like cloud services, websites, SQL or whatnot. So there's like monitoring solutions, there's Aspera. So if you want to go and basically upload data using UDP, perhaps if you're building a big media solution, you could use their network to do that and achieve that in quite an easy fashion. ClearDB, if you want to use MySQL, MongoDB is in here somewhere, MongoLab. So if you want to use Mongo, you can do that. In our case, we're going to use SendGrid. Now, what happens here is a simple workflow, so you can step through. They give sort of tiered or graduated pricing. Most providers do provide a free offering. Now, I'm just going to not go through the rest of that because I've already got one here. But once you provision, I think I did SendGrid North Europe. Once you provision your, in this case, service, you can then start consuming it and utilizing it immediately. They typically provide this same standard format here, which gives you details about your service or information about how to use it. But for this, I really just need the connection info, and then I need to use the SendGrid module within mobile services. So with that, I've just taken that connection info, and I've already created a snippet. So we'll jump into mobile services. To answer, this is JavaScript. See the window.clipboard.setData and then the encoded string? That's the magic there. So it's handy for presentation, saves me typing the whole time. So let's go to our to-do item, and in this case, let's change the insert to actually send an email rather than sending a toast. So again, similar, request execute, respond. This case, send email. Now you can see I'm saying new up SendGrid here. If I come to the very top, you'll see that I've required the SendGrid module. Come down, there's my credentials from the portal which I just showed you, and then it's simple as sending an email with your to-do item. In this case, I'm adding some text to that email body. Hit save. And with that, again, it's going to be live. Any second. There we go. So, say, hello from store SendGrid. Hit save. So that's added. And now we'll go to hotmail.com. And there's a new to-do item. And it says, hello from store SendGrid. So pretty easy solution, easy to implement. And essentially, again, same concept of making it incredibly easy to perform things that sometimes take a bit more time to do typically. So let's go with the story of not using slides here. This is just diagnostics. Let's jump to the demo. So we've got a few minutes left here. Diagnostics, logging, and scale. We've seen logging already. If we go to the dashboard here, you can see diagnostics like API calls, CPU time, data out. And these are, for instance, we've done 21 API calls through the course of this presentation. This is just a way where you can see what's happening. And it's also a way where you can go and say, well, hey, I can see that I'm basically trending upward here, and perhaps I need to scale out my mobile service. So on the scale tab, we can actually do that. If you're running in the free mode, so let me just drop this guy back to free, hit yes. You'll see here, free mode runs on a shared sort of high density environment. And if we want to go and scale out our web tier, perhaps because we know we're going to need high throughput kind of solution, or perhaps say, for instance, AppStory built this Tech Days Belgium application. For the course of the event there, they scaled out to 2 reserved instances. And now that it's done, they can scale back down to the shared tier. To scale out on mobile services and anything within Azure is quite easy. This spending limit warning is something you'll get, so we're very good at telling you if something's going to cost money, you need to specifically opt in if you're on, say, a free trial or whatnot. So keep an eye out, read the text in this case. It just says it's going to cost me money to do this. But I'm going to go from a shared core into a reserved core, and I'm going to basically spin out my web tier across 10 instances. And that's going to take my scripts and have them available across those 10 instances as well. And within a couple seconds there, as you saw, we've just gone and done that. So that's really quite a powerful demonstration of, you know, utilizing the cloud, in this case, Windows Azure Mobile Services, scaling out like that is something traditionally difficult to do within your own on-premise data centers. So with that, that's the end of scale. You like that? Cool. Let's close. So we've seen mobile services from a number of different platforms. We actually consumed it from Windows Store, Android, Windows Phone. I didn't show iOS, but what I'd like you to take away with you is in this 1 hour, we built out a service that can be easily consumed and utilized across all those device platforms. It's been an hour. I used some snippets, sure, but granted, I think you'll find that you could probably do what we did here in about half a day once you're familiar with the APIs, and maybe a day if you're just doing it the first time. So that's something really to take away. Powerful yet flexible turnkey backend solution for your mobile apps. We covered all of the key tenets of mobile services: data, service scripts, auth, notifications, the scheduler, logging and diagnostics, and scale. So with that, I'll leave some resources if you want to take a photo, but these are the best places to sort of get started with mobile services. If you've got Q&A, we've dedicated forum. We've got feature requests through the user voice forum, feedback, emails, and Twitter for myself and my colleague who works on the dark side, who fields iOS and Android questions. So with that, thank you for coming. I'll be available for questions up here now.